Reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Planting the Seed. Okay. They agreed that it was a good idea, and Prabhupada immediately scheduled a wedding date for 2 days later. Swamiji said he would cook a big feast and hold the marriage ceremony in his apartment, and he asked Mukunda and Janaki to invite their relatives. Both Mukunda and Janaki had grown up in Oregon, and their family members would found it impossible to travel such a long distance on such short notice. Only Janaki's sister, Joan, agreed to come. Joan: little did I know what kind of wedding it would be. All I knew was that they had met a Swami and were taking Sanskrit from him, as well as attending his small storefront temple on Second Avenue. When I met the Swami, he was sitting beside the window in front of his room, bathed in sunlight, surrounded by pots of prasadam, which he was distributing to the devotees who were sitting around him against the wall. I was a follower of macrobiotics and not so eager for taking his noonday meal. When I entered the room, the Swamiji said, "Who is this?" And Mukunda said, "This is Janaki's sister, Joan. She has come from Oregon to attend the wedding." Swamiji said, "Oh, where is Oregon?" Mukunda said, "It's 3,000 miles away on the other side of the United States." And he asked, "Oh, coming from so far, very nice. And when will the other members of the family arrive?" Then I said, "I'm the only one who's coming for the wedding, Swamiji." He said, "Never mind. It is very nice that you have come. Please sit down and take some Krishna prasadam." He offered me some dal, a rather moist sabji, yogurt, salad, and chapatis. But because I was a devotee of macrobiotics, all of this prasadam was very unpalatable to me. Practically speaking, it was sticking in my throat the whole time. But I remember looking over at the radiant and beautiful person who was so eager for me to take this prasadam that he had prepared. So I took it all. But in my mind, I decided this would be the last time I would take this lunch with the devotees. Macrobiotics. Macrobiotic diet. That's a raw diet. Persons who follow macrobiotics, they don't eat any cooked food. They don't eat any cooked food. They think that when you cook food, you damage it. And it's very difficult for your body to digest cooked food. So they were very... There's a group of persons called macrobiotic dieters that were very fanatic about this, only eating raw food. And they didn't eat any grains, no rice, no wheat, only vegetables, raw vegetables. So when this girl Joan, who's actually Jamuna, Janaki's sister, when she was offered these cooked items because she was following that kind of diet, it got stuck in her throat. She couldn't eat anything. But because Srila Prabhupada was so lovingly serving the prasadam, she ate everything that he had given her. At any rate, somehow I finished the meal, and Swamiji, who had been looking over at me, said, "You want more? You want more?" And I said, "No, thank you. I'm so full." It was very nice, but I can't take any more. So finally the prasadam was finished, and they were all getting up to clean, and Swamiji commented that he wanted to see Mukunda, Janaki and myself for making preparations for the wedding the next day. So when we were all there sitting in the room with him, the Swami reached over into the corner where there was a big pot with crystallized sugar syrup sticking to the outside. I thought, oh, this is supposed to be the piste de resistance, but I can't possibly take any more. But he reached his hand into the pot anyway and pulled up a huge, round, dripping gulab jamun. I said, oh, no, I'm so full, I can't take any. And he said, oh, take, take. And he made me hold out my hand and take it. Well, by the time I finished the gulab jamun, I was fully convinced that this would be the last time I would ever come there. Then he began explaining how in the Vedic tradition, the woman's side of the family made lavish arrangements for the wedding. And since I was the only member of the family who had come to assist, I should come the next day and help him make the wedding feast. So the next morning at 9, when Janaki was decorating the room for the fire sacrifice, stringing leaves and flower garlands across the top of the room, I went upstairs to meet Swamiji. When I arrived, he immediately sent me out shopping with a list, 5 or 6 items to purchase. One of those items was not available anywhere in the markets, although I spoke to so many shopkeepers. When I came back, he asked me, "You have obtained all the items on the list?" And I said, "Well, everything except one." He said, "What is that?" I said, "Well, no one knows what tumor is." He had me wash my hands and sat me down in his front room on the floor with a 5-pound bag of flour, 1 pound of butter, and a pitcher of water. And he looked down at me and said, "Can you make a medium soft dough?" I replied, "Do you mean a pastry or a pie crust or a short crust dough? Or petit prise dough? What kind of pastry do you want?" "How old are you?" he said. And I said, "I'm 25, Swamiji." "You are 25, he said, "and you can't make a medium soft dough?" It is a custom in India that any young girl from the age of 5 years is very experienced in making this dough. But never mind, I'll show you. So he very deftly emptied the bag of flour and with his fingertips cut in the butter until the mixture had a consistency of coarse meal. Then he made a well in the center of the flour, poured in just the right amount of water, and very deftly and expertly kneaded it into a velvety smooth, medium soft dough. He then brought in a tray of cooked potatoes, mashed them with his fingertips, and began to sprinkle in pieces. He showed me how to make and form potato kachuris, which are fried Indian pastries with spiced potato filling. From 11 until 5 that afternoon, I sat in this one room making potato kachuris. Meanwhile, in the course of the same afternoon, Swamiji brought in 15 other special vegetarian dishes, each one in a large enough quantity for 40 persons. And he had made them single-handedly in his small, narrow kitchen. It was rather hot that afternoon, and I was perspiring. I asked Swamiji, "May I please have a glass of water?" He peeked his head around the door and said, "Go wash your hands." I immediately did so, and then I returned. Swamiji had a glass of water for me. He explained to me that while preparing this food for offering to the Supreme Lord, one should not think of eating or drinking anything. So after drinking the glass of water, I went in and washed my hands and sat down. About 2 in the afternoon, I said, "Swamiji, may I have a cigarette?" And he peeked his head around the corner and said, "Go wash your hands." So I did. And when I came back, he explained to me the 4 rules of Krishna consciousness. I continued to make the kachoris, and around 3:30, 4 o'clock, it was extremely warm in the room, and as Swamiji was bringing in one of his preparation, I was wiping my arm and hand across my forehead. He looked down at me and said, "Please, go wash your hands." Again, I did so. And upon returning, he had a moistened paper towel for me. He explained that cooking for Krishna required standards of cleanliness and purity that were different from the ones I was accustomed to. So, one thing comes to mind many years later after this particular incident. Srila Prabhupada had a servant. His name was Hari Sari. So he had just become the servant of Srila Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada had on his desk a water pitcher and a glass. And he had just finished drinking water, and the water pitcher was there. And Srila Prabhupada told Hari Sari to remove it. So he thought, you know, he'd pick up the glass and the pitcher and take it out. But Prabhupada instructed him. He said, "No, you pick up the glass and then remove it. Wash your hand, because now your hand is not clean because you picked up the glass. Then come back with clean hands and then take out the pitcher." So Hari Sari thought in his mind that he wasn't the first servant that Srila Prabhupada had, and probably no one had these kind of cleanliness habits, right? No one was used to washing their hand after touching a glass. So he could understand how patient Srila Prabhupada was to explain to everyone that came to him about what is cleanliness in Krishna consciousness. This is a very important aspect of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was explaining to this brand new girl who wants to go out and have a cigarette how she has to be clean for Krishna. What's the standard of cleanliness? You want to go drink a glass of water? Okay. Wash your hands. Then again, wash your hands. Right? So Srila Prabhupada had this unlimited ability to be patient with those persons. Unlike him, his sister, Baba Tarini, who we affectionately known as Pishima, she didn't have that kind of patience. When the foreign girls would come to help her cook for Srila Prabhupada, actually, the devotees weren't so interested to let her come and cook for Prabhupada, because she would bring mustard oil from the house, and she would make all these fried items, and the devotees were concerned to try to protect Srila Prabhupada's health. But whenever she wanted to cook for Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada would immediately agree, "Oh yes, let her cook. So the foreign devotee girls would come to try to help. And she would have them cutting, just like Srila Prabhupada was engaging Joan, who later became Jamuna, a famous cook. But inevitably, they would not wash their hands or not be clean as she wanted, so she would throw them out of the kitchen. Right? And then she would get some of the local girls to come and help her. So Srila Prabhupada, a pure devotee of the Lord, but yet he had the patience to instruct everyone about how to be clean. So we can understand the importance of this principle. A lot of times we just kind of gloss over the cleanliness principle, right? And especially in deity worship, one has to be extremely careful to be clean, right? Srila Prabhupada said, when it's in relation to Krishna, we're fanatically clean, right? We always make sure that our hands are clean when we're doing deity worship, right? So you see, when we're offering artik, we're purifying our hands before each item, after each item, right? So it's very important, this principle of cleanliness, whether we're dressing the deities, cooking for the deities, or making garlands for the deities, we should always make sure that our hands are very clean. That's because we're doing it for Krishna. If we're not careful in that regard, then what's the difference between us and Krishna? But because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are trying to serve Him, therefore we must be sure that our hands are always clean. About 30 people attended. The decorations were similar to the ones for the initiation a few days before, except they were more festive and the feast was more lavish. Swamiji's front room was decorated with pine boughs, and leaves and flowers were strung overhead from one side of the room to the other. Some of the new initiates came, their large red beads around their necks. They had taken vows now, 16 rounds a day, and they chanted on their beads, just as Swamiji had shown them. And they happily, though self-consciously, called one another by their new spiritual names. Janaki. Swamiji said that I should wear a sari at my wedding, and he said it should be made of silk. I asked him what color, and he said red. So Mukunda bought me an absolutely elegant sari and some very nice jewelry. The Swamiji's friends were used to seeing Janaki, as she always came with Mukunda, but usually she wore no makeup and dressed in very plain clothes. They were astonished and somewhat embarrassed to see her enter wearing jewelry, makeup, and a bright red sari. The bride's hair was up and braided, decorated with an oval silver filigree hair ornament. She wore heavy silver earrings, which Mukunda had purchased from an expensive Indian import shop on Fifth Avenue, and silver bracelets. Prabhupada directed Mukunda and Janaki to sit opposite him on the other side of the sacrificial fire arena. And just as at the initiation, he lit the incense and instructed them in the purification by water, recited the purification mantra, and then he began to speak. He explained about the relationship between man and wife in Krishna consciousness, and how they should serve each other, and how they should serve Krishna. Prabhupada then asked Janaki's sister to present her formally to Mukunda as his wife. Mukunda then repeated after Swamiji, I accept Janaki as my wife, and I shall take charge of her throughout both of our lives. We shall live together peacefully in Krishna consciousness, and there will never be any separation. And then Prabhupada turned to Janaki. Will you accept Sriman Mukunda Das Brahmachari as your life's companion? Will you serve him always and help him to execute his Krishna conscious activities? And then Janakli replied, "Yes, I accept Mukunda as my husband throughout my life. There shall never be any separation between us, either in happiness or distress. I shall serve him always, and we shall live together peacefully in Krishna consciousness." No one knew anything of what was going on except Swamiji. He led the chanting. He gave the lines for the bride and groom to exchange. He told them where to sit and what to do. He, in fact, had told them to get married. He had also cooked the elaborate feast that was waiting in the kitchen for the completion of the ceremony. Prabhupada asked Mukunda and Janaki to exchange their flower garlands and after that to exchange sitting places. He then asked Mukunda to rub some vermilion down the part in Janaki's hair and then to cover her head with her sari. Next came the fire sacrifice and finally the feast. The special feature of the wedding was the big feast. It turned out to be quite a social success. The guests ate enthusiastically, asked for more, and raved about the sensational taste. Prabhupada's followers were accustomed to the simple daily fare of rice, dal, sabji, and chapatis, found the feast intoxicating, and ate as much as they could. Many of Mukunda's friends were macrobiotic followers, and at first they fastidiously avoided all the sweets. But gradually the enthusiasm of the others wore down their resistance and they became captivated by the Swami's expert cooking. "God is a good cook," said Janaki. Bruce, who had missed the first initiation, was seeing the Vedic sacrifice and tasting the Swamiji's kachoris for the first time. He resolved on the spot to dedicate himself to Krishna consciousness and become one of the Swamiji's disciples as soon as possible. Almost all the visitors personally approached Swamiji to thank him and congratulate him. He was happy and said it was all Krishna's blessing, Krishna's grace. Well, Bruce is Brahmananda. Right? So he missed the first fire sacrifice initiation. He didn't get initiated. But then after seeing the fire sacrifice for the wedding of Mukunda and Janaki, and having the feast, then he became determined, I'll get initiated by the Swamiji. Recently, in Vrindavan, Brahmananda Prabhu gave a little talk about Srila Prabhupada's going to America. So he related that after he got initiated, he wanted to be a good disciple. He wanted to surrender everything to the Swamiji. So whatever money he had, he got it out of the bank. He had some stocks that he got for his bar mitzvah. If you know what that is, bar mitzvah. It's a Jewish family, and one of the ceremonies in the Jewish family is the young boys, they have their bar mitzvah. And then at that time, they get some gifts, and he had some stocks from that. So he collected all that, stocks, money. He gave everything to Srila Prabhupada. And he said it was quite a good amount, several thousands of dollars he gave to Swami. So Swamiji accepted it gracefully. "Oh, thank you." And next to Swamiji, he kept his Bhagavatams. Actually, Srila Prabhupada went to America with only his three volumes of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Right? So Brahmananda was thinking that I've given everything now to the Swamiji. He'll give me those Bhagavatams. So Srila Prabhupada didn't indicate anything that he was going to give him the Bhagavatams. And actually Srila Prabhupada was selling the three Bhagavatams, the first canto, three volumes of the first canto, for $16.80. Actually, when he got off the boat, the Captain Pandey, who was the captain of the boat, Prabhupada wanted to present him with a gift. So he gave him the three volumes of the first canto of the Bhagavatam to Captain Pandey. But Captain Pandey insisted to pay for it. Right? And then Srila Prabhupada relented and said, okay. And then Pandey said, how much is it? Well, Prabhupada didn't really have any idea what it would be in foreign currency. He had written inside the book, the three volumes cost 16 rupees and 80 paisa. So he thought for a moment and then he told Captain Pandey, $16.80. So that was the cost of the three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Brahmananda was sitting there, he was looking at the books, kind of indicating to Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada just stood there. So then he couldn't take it anymore. He said, Prabhupada, can I have the Bhagavatams? And Srila Prabhupada turned to Brahmananda and said, oh, the Bhagavatams? They are extra. So Brahmananda said, but Prabhupada, I don't have any money. I gave everything to you. And Srila Prabhupada said, okay, you can take them and pay me later. So Brahmananda was feeling a little pinched in his heart that he had given everything, but still he was asking for more. But many years later he understood the realization that you cannot purchase the spiritual master. And he said, it took me a long time before I paid that $16.80, but eventually I paid it. So I thought that story was interesting. It reminded me of that when Bruce's name came up. After the ceremony, Mukunda and his wife entertained many of the devotees and guests in their apartment. The evening had put everyone in high spirits, and Hayagriva was reciting poetry. Then someone turned on the television to catch the scheduled interview with Allen Ginsberg, the poet. And much to everyone's happiness, Allen began playing harmonium and chanting Hare Krishna. Allen Ginsberg was a poet in New York, and he was kind of like the Bohemian persons. Bohemian persons were, you know, persons that were rejecting society, the Bohemians. They were the forerunners of the hippies. And Allen Ginsberg was kind of their leader. He was like the guru of the Bohemians. And his poetry was famous among the Bohemian persons. And especially there on the Lower East Side of New York. So he was chanting Hare Krishna, and this led many other people to become interested in what this chanting was. Allen began playing harmonium and chanting Hare Krishna. He even said there was a Swami on the Lower East Side who was teaching this mantra yoga. Krishna consciousness was new and unheard of. Yet now the devotees were seeing a famous celebrity perform kirtan on television. The whole evening seemed auspicious. Back in his apartment, Prabhupada, along with a few helpers, cleaned up after the ceremony. He was satisfied. He was introducing some of the major elements of his Krishna consciousness mission. He had initiated disciples, he had married them, and he had feasted the public with Krishna prasadam. If I had the means, he told his followers, I would hold a major festival like this every day. So, Srila Prabhupada, as mentioned here, he was introducing the various elements of the Krishna consciousness movement. And with persons that were, you know, completely in opposition in one sense to those principles. These were all young hippies that believed in, you know, intoxication was the goal of life. They believed that illicit sex was natural. They believed that following rules and regulations was old-fashioned. Right? So here we see that Srila Prabhupada is taking such persons and introducing to them the four regulator principles, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on a regular basis, and then Vedic system of marriage. Because Srila Prabhupada said, one day he just said, okay, no more boyfriend, girlfriend, then you must get married. So these things were completely in opposition to their way of life, was completely adverse to their consciousness, but yet we see they're not only doing it, but they're happily doing it. They're accepting whatever the Swamiji said. And they're excited about it. So one will ask, how did that happen? How can such a thing happen? In one sense, it seems like a miracle. And I think that's why Mukunda's book, he wrote a book about those early days in 26 Second Avenue, and the title of his book is Miracle on Second Avenue. Miracle. And that's what it is. It's a miracle. A miracle is something that's very extraordinary that happens. You know, like Jesus Christ rose people from the dead. That's a miracle. Right? So in the same sense, to get these drug-addicted, sense-gratification-addicted hippies to take to Krishna consciousness, it was nothing short of a miracle. But we learn from Srimad Bhagavatam that we're in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that when the pure devotee is there on the planet, actually it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when the pure devotee is there on the planet, he enlivens the conditioned souls from within the heart to take to Krishna consciousness. So here we see Joan, the sister of Janaki, who later became Jamuna. She became one of the most accomplished cooks in our movement. But at that time, she just wanted to go out and have a cigarette. Right? She was hot and wiping the sweat off her brow, and Prabhupada was telling her, wash your hand. And she didn't even like prasadam when she first took it. She liked macrobiotics. So how did she change? How did she become completely converted? And that's the miracle. By the desire of the pure devotee of the Lord, Paramatma, Krishna, from within the heart, enlightens the conditioned soul. And all of a sudden he starts thinking, well, this is pretty nice. I like this. So that is the miracle. Srila Prabhupada once in Hyderabad, there was a big pandal program. Must have been 10,000 people there at the pandal program. And Srila Prabhupada was speaking for a long time. In fact, if you look at his lectures, they're about 30, 45 minutes max. And then it's thank you very much. Right? But at this pandal program, it started at 7. And at 9:30, 10 o'clock, still he was speaking. And then after that, he took questions. Questions and answers. And I was, by my good fortune, sitting at just off to the side of his Vyasa-san on the stage there in this big Maidan in Hyderabad. And I was looking at him from the side, and there was a halogen lamp on this side of his head. And towards the end of the lecture, I could see the light from the halogen lamp was reflecting off the tears that were coming out of his eyes. So Srila Prabhupada, in this lecture, was experiencing divine ecstasy, so much so that there were tears coming out of his eyes. But at that time, Achyutananda would take the questions, people would write them out, and ask Srila Prabhupada. So one question was, can you show any miracles? So Srila Prabhupada explained that for the pure devotee of the Lord is not interested in showing any miracles. Whatever he needs to do for the service of Krishna, Krishna empowers him to do that service. So like that he was explaining to that, answering that question. But if you want to see miracles, and he pointed to all the devotees sitting on the stage, these are my miracles. I have turned Mlechas into Brahmanas. And all the devotees went, Haribo, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So the point is that how people turn to Krishna consciousness is by the desire of Krishna's devotees. Right? Otherwise it's not possible. Without the dust of a pure devotee of the Lord, the gates to hell are wide open. And no one ever entered into Vaikuntha or into the spiritual world without the mercy or the dust from the pure devotee's lotus feet. And what is that dust? So it's explained that that dust is the divine mercy particles. Just as the Lord's lotus feet are decorated with sandalwood pulp, right? And then at the end of the night, they take off the tulsi leaves and the sandalwood pulp. So there's some dust particles. Well, it's described that the instructions coming from the pure devotee of the Lord are just like the saffron mercy particles that are there on the lotus feet of the Lord. And by those instructions that enter into the ear of the conditioned soul, there's a change that takes place in the heart. So that's the process. It's 9 o'clock, and the chapter's over. Now we're starting chapter 9, Stay High Forever. So should we read, or would you like to ask questions? Because we need to kill another 10 minutes here. Any questions? Yes, Bhaman. Microphone. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, we should be able to finish off 10 minutes with that. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj Ki Jai. So, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was a very renounced sadhu living in Navadvip. And he was continuously chanting the holy name of the Lord. Right? Very renounced person. He always was in the mood of separation from the Lord. And he was good friends with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who at that time was living in in Swarup Ganj, Surabhi Kunj, Godrum, which is just across the Jalangi from Mayapur. He was so absorbed in chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and sometimes people would come for blessings. Right? And he felt that was a botheration. He didn't like it. Right? So in that area, there are many boats. If you go to Mayapur even today, many boats are there. And there would, you know, people do fishing, right? So they have these boats. So when they're not using the boats, they turn them over. So he would go and hide underneath the boat and chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, just so that he wouldn't be bothered. But yet sometimes people would still come and bother him, give me blessings. And there, he realized the blessings for them meant not Krishna bhakti. They want to, you know, pass the test, get their daughter married. That's the kind of blessings. And he wasn't interested in that. So he mostly tried to stay away from mundane persons, because they didn't understand about Krishna consciousness. And it got so that he would go and chant in where people pass stool. You know, there's usually one fixed place in a village where people go and do their business, right? And other in the daytime, nobody goes there in that place, right? So he would go there and chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, because nobody would go there to bother him, right? And when he needed, you know, some cloth, he wouldn't beg anybody for cloth. What he would do was, at the burning ghat, you know, they bring these bodies and they're all wrapped in some cloth. And the system in Bengal is, I know because I just went through two funerals, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law recently. So what happens is they take the body to the Ganga and it's wrapped in a cloth. And then they take the cloth off and they bathe the body. It's the last Ganga snan before the burning ghat. So everything that comes from the house that's connected with this body, they throw it on the side of the Ganga. They reject it. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was so renounced that when he needed some cloth, he would go to that place with this rejected cloth and take some cloth from there, wash it, and that's what he would wear. That is renunciation. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was not a literate person. He didn't know how to read or write. But according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at that time, he was on the highest platform of Prema Bhakti. His attachment to Krishna and the holy name were of the highest order. Now, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it came time for him to get initiated. So, the father doesn't initiate the son. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And he thought, he's such an erudite scholar, wrote the Surya Siddhanta and so many other treatises. When he was a young man, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a lecture in front of all the Brahmins, right? There was a mela of all the Brahmins. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was meant to go and speak there. But he became with fever. He couldn't go. Right? So he sent his son, Bimla Prasad at the time. And these were all caste Brahmins. Smartas. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur glorified the principle of Brahminical culture and the Brahmins, with verse after verse. And all these smarter Brahmins became very happy. He was glorifying the Brahmins like anything. But then he came to shloka after shloka after shloka, that it's not by birth, it's by qualification, by your activities, and not your, by your karma, and not by your activities, by your qualities. And what are the qualities that a Brahmin should have? Verse after verse after verse. Right? So these smartas, they became completely finished because none of them had those qualities. Only they were claiming to be Brahmins by birth. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so forceful and had quoted so many shlokas. The people were completely amazed, and they all rushed forward to touch his lotus feet. And the police there at that time had to control the crowd. Right? So such a scholar he was. But here, his father is telling him to get initiated by Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, illiterate person. Right? But it was his father's order, so he approached him. Please give me initiation. And he said, no, you're a very scholarly person, and I'm not taking any disciples. I don't have any disciples. Sent him away. And he explained to Bhaktivinoda Thakur what happened. He said, no, somehow or another you have to get initiated. That's the person. There's nobody else. That's the person. So then he was perplexed what to do. He approached him. It was hard to meet him because he was always hiding. Again and again, nothing doing. Then finally one day he said to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, if you don't initiate me, if you don't accept me as your servant, then I've nothing, no resource but then to finish my life. I'll drown myself in the Ganga. Then Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj agreed to accept him as his initiated disciple. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj ki jai. So he told Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of his instructions was that never go to Calcutta. Calcutta's Maya. So taking that instruction, he stayed in Mayapur, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, under the shelter of his spiritual master's lotus feet, began to chant the holy name of Krishna, and he would chant a lakh every day of the name, and continuously chant. He had a small hut, very small hut that he lived in. And he would sit there and chant. And in the rainy season, that hut would leak. But he would just put an umbrella on top of his head and continue to chant under the instructions of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. When his spiritual master passed away, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went there to claim the body and enshrine it in a samadhi. And he had told everyone that when I die, simply drag my body through the streets of Navadvip. Right? So there were some foolish persons that were getting ready to do this. But when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur heard about it, he immediately rushed to the scene and he said, I will not let anyone touch the body of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj unless they're pure. Right? And all these Babajis, they, you know, wear Babaji Vesh, means just a loincloth and one charter, but they're all keeping one DD. They all have their DD. You know, DD. They say DD, but it's their kept. So he told them, anyone who has not had illicit sex in the last 1 month, then you come forward. But no one could come forward. He said in the last week, no one can come forward of all these Babajis, so-called. Last night, no one could come forward. So in that way, he took the body of his spiritual master, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and enshrined him in Samadhi. So that Samadhi is there in Mayapur, in the Mamabadi, Chaitanya Mutt. Very beautiful. He would never allow himself to be photographed, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. There's no photograph of him. But we can understand how he looks because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had commissioned a vigraha, was made of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, that's there in Mayapur. So that's the only real way we can understand how he looked, is through that vigraha. But he was a very renounced person, and his life before he came to Navadvip, no one is much sure about it, but it was felt, because he never talked about it, but it was felt that he was a householder somewhere in Bengal and had gone to Vrindavan, and he was living a very renounced life in Vrindavan, and then he had come to Navadvip, a staunch devotee of Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna. And throughout his lifetime, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made many references to the mercy of his spiritual master, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, that simply by his blessings was he able to spread the Krishna consciousness movement in the way that he did. It was by the mercy of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So on this very auspicious day, we can remember Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and pray for the empowerment to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, because that is the only hope for humanity. Humanity is headed towards a very dark and precarious situation, and it's only this movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that can save civilization from the disaster that is awaiting it through materialism. So on this day we can pray to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj to help this movement so that it can save humanity. Hare Krishna. Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.